Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with the Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details. Hey, everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryan over there, and it's just the two of us. We're flying solo, and that's okay. We're going to do this, and this is Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, you know, before we get going, we are the worst self-promoters, and we consistently forget to tell people that we have a book and a board game for sale for Christmas.
Oh, that's great. Great point, Chuck.
And every once in a while, they'll say things like, you know, if you guys want to mention this.
Did they say that?
I feel like every now and then we get emails that say, hey, did you forget that you have these things?
I don't forget. I just assume like everybody doesn't want to hear about it, you know?
Oh, I know. But we're just not good at this.
So, no, we're not.
As we stumble through yet another self-promotion, we have a book and a board game, and they both make great Christmas gifts.
Please stop. This is making me so uncomfortable.
Go buy them, everybody.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good. We're proud of both of them. I mean, we wrote a book, and we also, with our good buddy Nils Parker, I should say, and we also helped create a board game with our good buddies over at Trivial Pursuit. So, yeah, I'm very proud of it. It's a legacy kind of thing, you know?
That's right. So we might have a couple of these reminders before Christmas because they do make great gifts for the Stuff You Should Know friend in your life.
Absolutely. So yeah, that was a great idea, Chuck. And it didn't feel so bad after all.
That's right. And now on to our probably, I think, eighth episode. I think it culminates. Mm-hmm. It's culminated in this after many, many episodes dealing with this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's funny that you say that because I was going to caveat this with like we will surely do another episode on this down the road within the next several years, I'm sure.
Because you're obsessed with it.
I'm obsessed with it, number one. Absolutely. It's one of the most interesting things because this kind of stuff we're going to talk about, the gut-brain microbiome axis. And it reveals, Chuck, like how little we actually know about our bodies and how they function. But it also provides these tantalizing clues about how cool the stuff we have left to understand is. You know what I mean? One day we're going to understand exactly how our bodies function, and it's going to be mind-boggling. I'm just very excited about it. So, yes, I'm obsessed with it. But the other reason why we'll surely do it again is because the stuff that we're going to talk about, we got to disclaim this episode in that it's pioneering, like, cutting-edge research, not bleeding-edge, cutting-edge research. So it's going to keep evolving. But that also means, Charles, that you and I can just be like, gee whiz and wow at this point, because this is all like just very early study kind of stuff.
That's right. And if you want to really get ready for this one, you could listen to episodes on digestion, mm-hmm. fecal transplants.
Yeah, the microbiome.
Human microbiome project. Mm-hmm. Immune system, probiotics, and even our old buddy fight or flight.
Yeah, and then just listen to the one on pyromania for kicks.
Did we do one on pyromania?
Of course.
Oh, man. It's funny. I was looking through the list the other day for a very special thing we have coming up that we can't announce yet.
It's more self-promotion, too.
Which we're very excited about, but I was looking through all of our episodes, and boy, it's getting more and more around like, huh? what? Really?
Yeah. Imagine somebody trying to wade into this stuff and like just encountering it now, you know?
Yeah. It was at one point, though, I was like, was I abducted for a few years? Like, I don't remember a lot of these.
Yeah. I have the same thing going on. But also, Chuck, now that you mentioned the list, I want to give a huge hat tip again to our Minister of Stats, Jill Hurley.
Yeah.
Just doggedly and tirelessly chronicles every single episode we've ever done. There's a Google Sheet out there that's open access that has every single episode in order, including the selects or when they ran as a select. It's just an amazing thing that she's doing for free for the love of it. I'm guessing she still loves it. I hope.
Well, Hurls, if nothing else, is stubborn. Mm-hmm. She won't quit, even if she hates it.
That's right. So let's talk about the gut-brain microbiome axis, Chuck, because there's a couple of ways to look at it. And the first way is the way that you would expect, that you do things like digest food, your gut linings produce mucus, you poop things out after you eat them, you even swallow, and your brain has a lot of other stuff to do than to just micromanage that. So you have an entirely different secondary central nervous system that's dedicated exclusively to eating, digesting, and harvesting nutrients from your food. And that's called the enteric nervous system.
That's right. And this is definitely one we hit on in the digestion episode. Mm-hmm. But they handle it all. And the enteric nervous system, the ENS, is really similar in a lot of ways to our own central nervous system, in that it's made up of nerves and neurons and neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. And it kind of does its own thing for the most part as far as controlling that stuff without the central nervous system lording over it saying, you forgot this part. You might want to move this through the intestine a little quicker. It kind of does its own thing. But this gut-brain sort of connection that we're talking about is really a connection between the ENS and the CNS, because they have figured that these two systems talk to each other. And they talk to each other from the gut to the brain, which is the really surprising part. We've kind of always known that the brain talks to the gut.
Right.
But now we're learning, hey, it looks like the gut is actually sending messages to the brain. And a lot of the stuff we thought was a certain way could be actually backwards, like IBS.
Yeah, like we've thought for a very long time that people with IBS, which is basically your lower parts aren't working at full steam. Either you're pooping too much and you got really thin, watery poops, or you're pooping too little, you're constipated. Either way, you have irritable bowel. It's one of the most appropriately named syndromes there is, right?
Yeah.
And of course, everybody's walking around knowing that anybody who has IBS is suffering from like stress or anxiety. And so it's bringing on like digestive issues. Well, this is why this stuff is so mind-blowing, is this the field of research that investigates the gut-brain microbiome axis is saying, actually, it's like Chuck just said, it might go both ways. You might have stress and anxiety not because of your job or, you know, like there's something stressing you out. The guy down the block keeps looking at you weird. That's not why you're stressed out or anxious. It's because you have IBS that's causing your stress and anxiety. We may have had it backwards all this time.
Yeah, and to be specific, like, you can get anxiety, obviously, because you have IBS. But what they're saying is that it's a chicken and the egg thing, is the origin of this mm-hmm. is actually in the gut and not like, oh, I have IBS because I'm anxious.
Right. And the reason why they're saying that this is even possible is because that crosstalk goes both ways. Like we're starting to find more and more evidence of just how the gut could possibly speak to the brain and send its own signals. And one of the main ones is the vagus nerve, which made a starring appearance in our episode on what happens in the brain during an orgasm. The vagus nerve is all about that. But the vagus nerve also has a lot to do with connecting the enteric nervous system with the central nervous system as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've known for a long time, and we talked about this some in our fight or flight episode, that, you know, let's say you're out in the woods and you're camping and you have to go to the potty mm-hmm. and you go and you squat down in the middle of nowhere. You're enjoying your time. You're about to do your business and a bear pops his head up.
Your body, what you doing?
Your body, well, the bear's like, I know what that means, but I'm here to interrupt that.
The bear says, I poop in the woods too.
That's right. That bear, like, you will go on an immediate sphincter lock. And it's not just because, it's not just a physical reaction you have, like, you choose to do, like, mm-hmm. oh, I better stop what I'm doing because there's a bear. Like, your body goes into fight or flight, and it sends, your brain sends a signal to your body saying, whatever else you're doing, shut it down now, because the most important thing going on right now is this bear in front of you.
Yeah. Like that FBI guy in Die Hard, shut it down now. But that's what,
oh man,
because the brain is saying, we've got much better things to do with the energy that you're using to digest that food right now. So of course the brain can talk to the enteric nervous system when it's fight or flight time. And at this point, Chuck, I want to give another huge hat tip to our own Dave Ruse, who helped us with this one.
Bang up job.
He came up with an entirely new phrase for fight or flight. Battle or skedaddle.
Yeah.
It's so good that I wrote an email just calling that one out to him, saying, like, this was a priceless term. And he said, that was all mine. So hopefully he's going to figure out a way to copyright that one.
He made up for Bruce Springsteen.
That's right. So, yes, we know that the brain can talk to the ENS, but the ENS can talk to the brain via the vagus nerve as well. And what they're figuring out is that it communicates in a number of different ways with the vagus nerve. Specifically, this is why they call it the gut-brain microbiota or microbiome axis, because what we're figuring out is, yes, you have cells that line your intestines, your guts, that are neurons. You have neural cells. You have sensory cells. You have a lot of the same cells that your brain uses to make sense of the world. Your gut has those same cells too. But we're figuring out that the bacteria that lives in your gut is actually communicating to your brain and saying, hey, change this behavior. Hey, try this instead. Hey, have you considered a red sweater? Green's just not your color. Like, the bacteria that live in our gut are telling our brains what to do in some ways.
It's pretty remarkable.
This is why we keep talking about this, Chuck.
I know. The bacteria, in addition to doing all the other great things they do, they produce metabolites. And these metabolites actually do function as neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. And one of the big examples that Dave dug up, and it's a big part of kind of one of the cruxes of this communication with the gut and the brain, are these short chain fatty acids, mm-hmm. SFCAs. They are byproducts or natural byproducts of fermentation. When you're digesting this dietary fiber, if you're hopefully eating enough dietary fiber, something I've had to do a lot more of lately.
It's so good for you. It's crazy. It seems like the key to health.
It is. And I don't want to get too gross here, but I've been on a lot of high fiber, and I have been more gassy
mm-hmm.
than I've ever been in my life.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And it's not even stinky gassy. It's almost just lucky. Like air.
Very lucky.
Yeah.
Because those
I'm not saying my toots don't stink anymore at all, ever. Right. But these, like, fiber toots don't really stink.
That is really bizarre, because cruciferous vegetable toots can really clear room, I guess is a way to put it. You're blessed, Chuck. You're hashtag blessed.
Well, my family's blessed, I guess.
But
because
right.
I don't really care.
But you're like, I kind of miss it.
But where were we? Short-chain fatty acids. They are, like I said, natural byproducts, and they play a really, really big role in the digestive tract. And they're one of the things sending these signals to your ENS.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, hey, maybe you should make more mucus. Maybe I can get the gut a little less inflamed. Maybe I can stop a little leakage from happening.
Mm-hmm. And so the short-chain fatty acids themselves, they're involved in neurotransmitters, but apparently they can talk to the brain themselves too, right? Like, they don't have to convert into anything else?
I think so. Okay. Like, just through the vagus nerve, right?
Yes. And so here's where we're at. Yes, they go through the vagus nerve. That's the key here. And we've recently found a new kind of cell that line the gut that are actually connected. They connect the gut to the vagus nerve. They're called neuropod cells. And that's how they think that the gut is actually communicating with the brain through the vagus nerve. They think they found kind of like the smoking gun or the missing link or whatever. But that's how these short-chain fatty acids would travel up the nerve. They would send their signal up the nerve, or they would travel through the circulatory system, which is another way that they figured out the gut can actually impact the brain. Is so you get the vagus nerve, and then you have the circulatory system. And if all of those metabolites that are being produced by your bacteria that are fermenting, and different bacteria ferment, create different metabolites as they ferment your food and your dietary fiber. And those metabolites, like you said, sometimes they're short-chain fatty acids, sometimes, which can be like a precursor to neurotransmitters or possibly a neurotransmitter itself, they actually build actual neurotransmitters too, like serotonin, dopamine, GABA, noradrenaline. All of these things are actually constructed by the bacteria in your gut as well. And we know for a fact that those things can make it through the circulatory system to the brain, and they definitely have an impact on the brain and what the brain does.
All right, maybe we should take a break.
All right.
Take a pause for the calls.
I'm just going to keep talking through the ad break. I'm too excited.
All right. We'll be back right after this. Hey everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky.
Hey everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep. Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, so when we left, we were talking about a lot of stuff that sounds pretty amazing and that we're just figuring out, one of which is that these short-chain fatty acids are actually able to stimulate that vagus nerve that we were talking about that stimulates the production of neurotransmitters. But here's sort of the headline is some of these neurotransmitters can actually play a role in mood disorders. So we're not just talking about a two-way street with things like fight or flight. We're talking about potentially autism, Parkinson's, depression, anxiety, like we were talking about with IBS. Mm-hmm. And they know this because they took in these poor little mice.
I know.
They're always, you know, doing the hard work on mice.
I know.
But they've taken mice, they've severed the vagus nerve in mice to see what happened. And what they observed was that this gut bacteria had a real effect on brain chemistry, because when they shut it down, they found big time reduction in stress hormone levels. Like, they completely went away in these mice.
Right. Which you would think their stress hormones would go up, having their vagus nerves severed, that would be a really stressful thing. But no. So that's really like a good illustration of the point that we're at in research. There's not been a thing where it's like, oh, this is exactly how this happens. This is how your gut microbiota affects, you know, your brain and your brain chemistry. We're not there yet. We just know that there is a definite correlation, not just in mice studies, Chuck, but also in human studies, which we'll talk about later. Like, there's plenty of human diseases that we've long known. If you have this disease, you also have like irritable bowel syndrome, or constipation is a hallmark of this neurological disorder that you wouldn't expect. We've known that they're connected, and it's all kind of correlative. Now we're trying to figure out the causes of it.
That's right. And it's not just like this communication isn't only happening through the vagus nerve.
Right.
You kind of briefly mentioned before the break, but there are all kinds of ways that they're communicating that we're finding out. One of them is through the circulatory system. We used to think that the brain was just sort of shut down from behind the blood brain barrier. Mm-hmm. But now they're showing that like hormones are getting through there. Other things are passing through. We've known about ghrelin. We've talked about ghrelin for a while, the hunger hormone, mm-hmm. that basically the stomach produces it, sends a message to the brain that says, I'm hungry. So we've known that can pass through. But now they're learning things like you mentioned serotonin. To me, this is one of the facts of the show. 95% of our serotonin is actually produced by gut bacteria.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, the brain also can produce serotonin. It can produce its own, but it appears that—
I guess just 5%.
Right. The serotonin, a lot of the serotonin that the brain uses comes from the gut, comes from bacteria fermenting food and producing as a byproduct of metabolism. It just so happens to produce this neurotransmitter. And I don't think anybody who's looking into this is saying it just so happens. Like, we appear to have co-evolved to take mm-hmm. advantage of this. Like, these bacteria started colonizing our guts, producing serotonin so much that our bodies found a way to really use serotonin in all sorts of different ways, including our brain, to regulate mood and stuff like that. And that's like one of the huge underlying messages of this, is that our microbiome, the bacteria that live inside of us, they have way more genes than we have. We have something like 20,000 genes in the human genome, but our microbiome typically has something like 2 million combined genes. And with those genes, with all those extra genes that we don't have, all that bacteria can produce stuff that we can't even produce, like vitamins and neurotransmitters that we wouldn't necessarily be able to produce on our own. And yet we rely on to function correctly. That's the most amazing example of symbiosis I've ever heard in my life. But the idea that bacteria fermenting food in your gut, Chuck, affects your mood or your outlook, or whether you have a cognitive disorder, like, that's really substantial.
It's super substantial.
I know. I feel like I could have come up with a better descriptor than really substantial, but I'm just too agog.
Should we talk about the study of college students?
Yeah.
As far as, you know, trying to provide a link between stress, like a two-way street between stress and our gut, mm-hmm. They said, well, there's no better place to go than to college students who are prepping for exams. And they said, if we're going to find out what's going on down there, we need to look at their stools. Mm-hmm. And they tested the stools during exam week and found that their feces had a lot less lactobacilli, which is one of the good bacterias, than during the first week of class when they're just getting to know each other and partying and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The same when they studied monkeys, little infant monkeys. And this is one of those tests that's a little bit sad. No one's dying here, but they're stressing out mama monkeys mm-hmm. on purpose. Mm-hmm. So they've got these mama monkeys and they'll play these loud noises while they're pregnant to kind of like shock them. And with the mothers who had the— Say what?
I got to stop you. I'm sorry. You just made a shock the monkey joke. without even intending to.
I did
that
say
was
shocked
fantastic.
Him, didn't I?
Yes. I could not let that walk by. Congratulations on that.
Monkey. Monkey. Great song.
Did you know I gotta shuck the monkey?
Do, 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 do. I wonder if they just walk around singing that constantly.
He was there's no way they don't. And then they get home at night and they're like, oh, and they feel a little guilty about it because they remember why they're singing Shock the Monkey, because they're actually shocking monkeys for a living.
Or, and we mean shocking with loud noises, not shocking with electricity.
Right. Well, yeah, that's what I guess Peter Gabriel meant too. But no, I think about it. I don't know. Maybe he was talking about with electricity.
Or I wonder if there's just one person, like the person who runs the lab on their way out says, you know, because they probably do it when they're asleep. They'll say, remember, you got to shock the monkey tonight. And they, everyone else just rolls their eyes.
Yeah.
And they have to put up with Marty.
Who runs the lab. Yeah, and wears
a
piano keyboard tie every day. Yeah. But there's different ones, too, because some of them have red backgrounds. You can tell they're a little different.
All right, so they make these loud noises, and then the mama monkeys who were shocked by these sounds, they had gut microbiomes with a lot lower levels of this good bacteria, of lactobacilli and, bifidobacteria,
bifidobacteria. Yeah, that's like stuff in yogurt, I think, both of those.
Which we'll get to.
All right, a little bit of foreshadowing there. But they had a dysbiotic microbiome is the upshot of it, right?
Yeah, like things get unbalanced, basically, because of these stress noises that they hear.
Right. So, but it goes the other way, too, that they're figuring out that if your gut microbiome gets out of balance, then that can make you stressed out, right? That can actually lead to mood disorders. That they're connecting, like, a really poor diet that's very low in, like, dietary fiber because, again, that's what your microbiome likes to crunch on and produces really important things like serotonin and dopamine from, that if you don't eat very well, it's possible your mood might not be as great or your outlook on life or your mental health might not be as great as it could be if you actually did have a much healthier diet. That is very substantial.
It is. And I think that kind of stuff kind of feeds on each other. It becomes this circular loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was something that was that Dave pointed out, too, that they're starting to realize that your CNS, your central nervous system, and your enteric nervous system are probably in communication constantly. They're just sharing information back and forth because it doesn't make any evolutionary sense for your bacteria to just be running the show and telling your brain what to do. That's one of the grimmest things I can possibly imagine, is that we're actually just puppets for bacteria in our gut.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't make sense for your brain to be controlling your ENS. Your ENS is a semi-autonomous nervous system.
Yeah.
So they're not bossing each other around. They're just sharing information and then making adjustments accordingly. But they can also affect one another and impact one another negatively when things are out of whack. Whether you're stressed out, it can affect your gut. Or if your gut's not doing well, it can stress you out. That's what we're finding.
Right. That's right.
And that is so substantial.
Is that the second time you said that?
Third,
okay.
I don't think you picked up the second one. That's all right.
And this is like, the reason this is big stuff, and if you're wondering like, yeah, but where is this all leading? We're about to tell you, because if you have, it's not just IBS. If you have Parkinson's, or if you or a family member is on the autism spectrum disorder, they're not saying that they can cure this stuff, but they are finding out very promising tests and studies that things like Parkinson's and autism can be mitigated somewhat with the use of certain probiotics and maybe in the future fecal transplants.
Yeah, I don't think anybody credible is saying like, oh, we can cure autism spectrum disorder with probiotics or something like that. But there's a lot of mounting evidence that you can alleviate a lot of the symptoms, including things like social avoidance or not being interested in social novelty. A lot of the classic symptoms that is associated with autism spectrum disorder that in my studies, at least, they clear up a little bit. They adjust. They actually kind of go away in some cases when you adjust the gut microbiota of these mice who have the mice analogy of autism.
Yeah, and, GI problems are not always, but pretty much synonymous with autism spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. If you have Parkinson's, you probably also have constipation. This has been true from the very first patients that were diagnosed by Dr. Parkinson himself. Mm-hmm. He realized that you also have constipation. Back then, this was sort of in the age where, I can't remember one of the recent episodes where we used to sort of have colonics and enemas for almost everything.
Well, that was probably the Kellogg's episode.
No, we referenced the Kellogg's. It was like a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember.
Oh, I don't know. Well, we talk about colonics and enemas a lot in this show.
I think it was maybe we're talking about the bleeders, the barbers. Yeah, that was it, because they used to give people enemas for everything. But they may have been onto something a little bit, as like kind of quacky as it sounded back in the day, mm-hmm. where if you had Parkinson's and constipation, they would give you a colonic or something or an enema, and it would kind of help your Parkinson's out. And people dismissed that a long time ago, but they may have actually been onto something a little bit there.
Yeah, the idea is that this is the current understanding of why Parkinson's and gut issues may be related, is that they actually think it might start with gut issues, that you have a certain type of E. coli that's producing a protein called Curly, C-U-R-L-I, and that Curly has an effect in causing other proteins to misfold, which makes it a prion. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
So this prion Curly causes misfolding of proteins in your gut. They end up clumping, which ends up constipating you. And this process starts a good 20 years before you show the classic symptoms of Parkinson's.
This is amazing.
Right. But the point is that by this time, after 20 years, your Curly production has gotten so good that it starts to travel up to the brain, where it starts misfolding proteins up there. And then you start to have the classic symptoms of Parkinson's, like tremors and shaking, and eventually possibly even hallucinations and things like that. That it all starts in your gut with these the E. coli that is colonized your gut, creating this Curly protein prion.
Yeah, and this is one of those where like research is going to help hopefully yield some, if not cure, some things that can help mitigate some of the effects of Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. But what it really could do is serve as an early warning system. That's not to say that if you have constipation, you're going to get Parkinson's in 20 years. But if you have chronic constipation, and it could be one of those things that they then look out and say, hey, this is something we might need to watch out for.
Right. And that's actually, I've seen somebody propose in a paper from, I think, this year, that you use the biomarkers of what's called leaky gut, mm-hmm. As a early diagnosis of autism. Because autism is usually diagnosed after a few years of age. I think maybe 3 or 5 or something like that, that they don't typically diagnose it before then. But that you would have leaky gut like long before this, and you could, you know, find it and possibly treat it. Because so leaky gut is this idea where your gut lining is meant to be semi-permeable, where only the stuff your gut wants to make it through, like nutrients and neurotransmitters and stuff like that, are able to pass through. Leaky gut is where you have basically holes and cracks in that lining. And so unwanted stuff like toxins and bugs and partially digested food can make it through your gut and causes inflammation. And then there's this whole cascading problem. And that is why leaky gut is associated with things like autism and I think even rheumatoid arthritis and a whole host of other diseases. So they're saying if we look for leaky gut and we find it, there's a good chance, I think like 90% of people on the autism spectrum have leaky gut as well, that would be a pretty good indication of an autism diagnosis later in life.
Yeah, I talked to one of my really good friends has a son with autism, and I was texting him about this, and it's like, man, there's a lot of really interesting research, and I asked him about his son having GI issues, and he said since day one, literally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, you're going to really dig this. He's a listener too. So I was like, you're going to really dig this episode. I said, they've come a long way. I said, and, you know, the future looks bright for, you know, helping to mitigate maybe some symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to be treatable. Leaky gut seems to be a treatable thing where it's probably the result of dysbiotic microbiota. And that if you, you know, introduce certain kinds of bacteria that you want that's missing, it may actually alleviate symptoms. Again, I don't think anybody's saying, like, you can cure autism just with probiotics, but it's possible that probiotics could really change somebody with autism's life for the better in a lot of ways, just from a probiotic supplement.
For sure.
And so there's a bunch of companies, apparently, they're just throwing, venture capitalists are just throwing money at any company working on this right now. They're called psychobiotics. Oh, sure. This idea that you can create like a probiotic cocktail to treat something like autism or multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis, and that you don't have to use pharmaceuticals or drugs that function in ways we don't really understand, that what you're doing is going to the bacteria and saying, here, live here and do your natural thing and produce this stuff that this patient isn't producing on their own, won't you? And that's just the most substantial way you can think of to treat something like that.
Super substantial?
Yeah, super substantial.
All right, well, let's take our second break. And we will come back and wrap this puppy up right after this. Hey, everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Hey friends, as every parent knows, kids seem to be everywhere all at once, and it's really tough for even the most watchful moms and dads to protect their little ones from every single thing.
Yeah, Duracell understands this, and that's why they're deeply committed to lithium coin battery safety. Lithium coin batteries power a bunch of important things around people's homes, including things young children may have access to. So Duracell not only educates parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of lithium coin battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them.
Even Duracell's packaging is child secure and designed to avoid accidental opening, because they believe their products should provide more than just power. They should also provide peace of mind. You can learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
So back to the autism spectrum disorder, they have found, this is about 10 years ago, they found a correlation between mothers who had a high sort of long-term prolonged fever during pregnancy, mm-hmm. that they were 7 times more likely to give birth to a baby who had symptoms of ASD. Again, correlation.
Right.
And then, again, the mice come into play. They got these pregnant mice. They infected them with a flu virus. Ugh, it's just poor mice.
I know.
And they caused a spiking fever. And they gave birth to babies. And they can't test baby mice for autism. But what they can do is study their patterns and their behaviors. And they did find that they had limited social interactions. They had decreased vocalizations. They were doing repeated behaviors. Mm-hmm. They had leaky bowels, some of the things that you might experience on the autism spectrum disorder.
Right. So they kind of traced that to this idea, this theory, and there's a bunch of theories about how people might develop autism. But this idea that when the mom has a fever, an immune response is activated by a gut microbe, a particular one called segmented filamentous bacteria, and that it gets T cells and cytokines active. And remember, we talked about cytokines in the mRNA episode.
And they want to storm.
They are helpful, but they can also overblow things quite a bit because they run around activating all sorts of other immune cells and basically say, go, go, go. And so the idea is that this triggers inflammation. And inflammation seems to be a huge problem for all sorts of things, everything from neurological disorders to arthritis, to irritable bowel syndrome, to basically anything that can be wrong with you seems to have some sort of basis in inflammation, like your body's mounting an immune response and you're suffering as a result. And so that's what the idea is with this, that these cytokines actually travel through the placenta and have an impact on the neurodevelopment of the fetus, and that is what causes autism. So that it's traced back to this, to the gut's ability to trigger the immune system, which is another whole thing that has, it has even wider implications than autism spectrum disorder too. Like it can trigger all sorts of other problems. It might not even have to do with the developing fetus. It can happen within you. Like it can cause cytokines to travel up to your brain and produce neurological disorders in you as well, mental health issues in you as well. That the gut and inflammation happening in a bad combo is nae good for the average human, they're finding.
That's right. You mentioned psychobiotics before the break. This is the idea that you can, again, use something like probiotics to treat anxiety or depression. And they have had a little bit of good fortune with the results here. And it looks like, I mean, they're doing some of this on humans. A lot of it was in rats. I think in 2011, they studied both rats and humans, mm-hmm. and they gave them strains of bacteria for about 30 days, Lactobacillus helveticus and that's the same one from before, mm-hmm. Bifidobacterium longum.
Nice.
They should just name these.
Biff. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Just call them by their pet names.
Like Lacto and Biff.
Yep.
Those two old friends.
That's right. They really are, too. They seem to, they pop up a lot where it's like, no, this is what you want. Like, if you look at probiotic supplements,
oh, yeah.
Almost across the board, you're going to find Lacto and Biff in there.
Yeah, Lacto and Biff, the two we love to eat. Mm-hmm. But they then put these people and mice through stress tests and found a, quote, significant reduction in anxiety-like behavior in the rats. And actual psychological distress was being alleviated in humans as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's that there. This is where we're what we're moving toward now is treating mood disorders, neurological disorders, mental health issues, a whole host of physical maladies, chronic diseases, with probiotics. If you can figure out what's missing in these patients, then you can grow that bacteria and put them in the person through like pills, and it's possible they'll clear it up. Another theory of where autism comes from is that there's a depleted gut where there's bacteria that's missing from the person, and they found in mice studies they're able to produce germ-free mice, Chuck, and those germ-free mice tend to exhibit the autistic symptoms. That when they treat them with probiotics, that those autistic symptoms tend to clear up, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't almost seem like what is definitely happening as science has progressed over the years. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's become way, way less segmented. Mm-hmm. It's like here's your brain, and here's your nervous system, and here's your organs, and here's this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all compartmentalized. And it just seems like through our own research over the years, everything is linked together, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a whole field called functional medicine that's developing that gets super poo-pooed by skeptics, and it's understandable. It's a very early field, and there are plenty of practitioners who overdo it in what they say that can be accomplished. But the whole idea behind it is it's integrative. Another name for it is integrative medicine, where you don't, like, one of the first things you would do when somebody came in with a problem, no matter what it was, is adjust their diet to a healthier diet and start there. Because this idea of, like, you're part of a big interconnected whole, that's how our bodies function. It seems intuitive to me now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Emily goes to a functional medicine doctor in addition to our regular MD. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a one or the other thing.
Right.
Ideally they work not together, but.
Oh, they won't even speak to one another.
No, but as a patient, ideally you can work with both is what I'm saying.
Yeah. You just don't tell them about each other.
She is, as you know, is, suffering through Lyme right now.
I didn't know that. Oh no.
Oh, I didn't tell you that?
No, man, that's terrible.
Oh, yeah. It's been a bad scene here at the house, man, for a while. But her diet is one of the big, she's on this crazy, weird, awful diet.
Nothing but goat milk.
No, but lots of weird, like, forest floor tea and just stuff that, you know, not able to eat. I mean, you name it, man. So many things that she can't have right now.
Man.
To try and help it out because, you know, the antibiotics they put her on were wrecking her.
Well, yeah, that's another thing too, is they're figuring out that antibiotics to treat just, you know, rando stuff or like the flu or something like that, that can have a huge, terrible effect on your gut chemistry, mm-hmm. and can have cascading effects down the road. That's another thing that they're just kind of in the initial studies of. And it's not any shade on antibiotics. They basically have saved more lives than can be possibly counted. But we have tended to kind of lean toward prescribing them willy-nilly, and people don't finish their prescription anyway. So there's all sorts of problems with it. But they're finding like there's a lot of less than obvious problems that can come about from killing off your gut microbiome.
Totally.
So there's one last thing I want to end with real quick, Chuck. One of the guy who actually, along with a guy named Ted Deenan, coined the term psychobiotics and psychobiome, which is a description of how your microbiome produces neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and all that, his name is John Cryan. And he has a theory of why we would have evolved to have a microbiome that would impact whether we're social or not. Because it's weird, mm-hmm. if you think about it. Why would your gut microbiome be being off, like dysbiotic, have any impact on socialization, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is super interesting, and the TED Talk is it's a TED Med. It's awesome if you have time to go watch it. A little heady, but good stuff. His theory, he basically studied those same germ-free mice that you were talking about, mm-hmm. that they basically don't have a microbiome of their own. Very sad. And he found out that these germ-free mice showed a lot of social impairment, especially the male mice, and he compared that to the germ-free mice to symptoms of ASD and found that it also affected males. So again, that got him thinking kind of like, what's going on with this stuff? Mm-hmm. So he said, I wonder if like having a healthy, sociable human is dependent on that gut bacteria, with the idea being that we're all hanging out together in groups, you know, tuk-tuk in the gang, mm-hmm. and we're trading bacteria with one another. Mm-hmm. We're in close contact with one another and swapping spit with one another. Mm-hmm. So our bacteria is more varied, basically, and that's how it's selecting that as a positive trait.
Yeah, and from the bacteria standpoint, the more humans there are around, the more hosts you have to colonize, the more the bacteria species thrives, right? So it's like it's beneficial either way. Like, we actually get a lot out of being social. Like, we have longer lifespans, we have a better outlook on life, the more like close friends and support network we have. It's just been documented over and over again. And it seems to be like the more we look into the microbiome and the psychobiome, that is driven by bacteria that seem to make us more social through their byproducts that they make that travel to our brain.
It's that circular loop again.
Yeah. Yep. It's a win-win is another way to put it. And I love that. Mm-hmm. You got anything else for now?
Nothing that's super significant.
Okay. Well, if you want to know more about the psychobiome, go watch John Cryan's TED Med talk. And also check out Science, the Journal Science's website, Meet the Psychobiome. It's a really good introduction too. And since I said it's a really good introduction too, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this from listeners in their 70s. We love to hear from our listeners that are even older than me. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel good. Hey, guys, my wife and I love your podcast. And this, I think, is just a bit of a reminder for us. I've been listening for years now every afternoon while playing Spite and Malice. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that is?
That sounded really familiar, and I didn't have time to look it up because that email just came in, right?
Yeah, this is hot off the presses.
Okay.
We're both in our 70s and love learning things we still don't know. But this email is to mention to both of you lately that your childhood folklore religious vocabulary has upticked some. Just reminding you that young people around the world are listening, and the word use brain framing is occurring bigly. We suggest for your consideration to stay with secular language like CE for the current era. And we used to default to CE. I guess we kind of have flopped back a little bit, haven't we?
I hadn't noticed. I wonder if we didn't in the folklore episode, because they just referenced folklore, and we just ran the folklore select recently. So maybe they're thinking like that's a current episode.
Oh.
That's my guess.
Okay. So your guess is that we're on it?
I feel like we're on it. I hadn't noticed anything like that.
I feel like we've said BC recently.
I think you were talking about the headache powder.
Okay. Which I love. We suggest you use secular language like CE for this current era, for example, in explaining historical timelines and science miracles, or humicals, as we call them. And science is miraculous in its own right, with all credit to the amazing human beings who discover the actuality of our natural universe. Thanks for what you do. Keep them coming. This is from Andre and Meredith Ryland in Pensacola, Florida.
Thanks a lot, Andre and Meredith. We appreciate you guys writing in. And if you want to be like those two and write in yourself, well, we want to hear it. Send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey there, everybody. Here's some bonus stuff you should know. This time it's about traveling to Orlando for business. Orlando has tons of places to host your conferences and meetings. Dr. Michael Edwards, CEO of Ocean Insight, said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. And when the day is done, you can kick off each evening at one of 46 Michelin-rated restaurants. What's not to love? So check out Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at OrlandoForBusiness.com. Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.